David White. To what extent do you believe that, and I'm maybe using a very unfortunate phrase, the Empire Church has actually impeded the growth of true Christianity?
The Empire Church. Do you mean churches that still think we're in Christendom where they can call the shots?
Yes.
I think they do impede the growth of Christianity. It's one of the striking things about reading the first 300 years of Christian history that they achieved so much with so little. In that first 300 years, they had no legislative power, of course. They had no armies. They had a lot of blood spilt, martyrdom blood. And they ran a lot of hospitals and food programs and preached far and wide. They achieved so much. It's near miraculous. Perhaps one of... I think I'd be fair to say the greatest ancient historian Australia has ever produced, Edwin Judge, thinks it is near miraculous what Christianity did in the Roman Empire up to about the year 300. And you can look at all sorts of sociological reasons why Christianity might have spread so quickly, but in the end, it is a real puzzle that historians are still puzzling over. What they had was persuasion and service. Persuasion and service. They were the tools they reckoned Christ had given them, and they used them. This is a long way of saying churches that still think we're in so-called Christendom would do well to reflect on what the New Testament actually says and what the first 300 years of Christianity embodied, that really the only tools Christians have are persuasion and service. Everything else is secondary.
Oh, right. I was just going to ask, when you said that, you know, like, people are not, is religion is not the cause of the war, but actually the heart of the human being. Why is it so easy that, you know, for us to actually put the blame on religion itself to take, to being the cause of the war itself?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways I can just take that as a comment that I sort of agree with, that if I think, if I've caught your flow, you're saying that people too easily say religion is the cause as a diversion from what really a moment's thought should demonstrate, that it's the human heart in possession of a passion unrestrained that is the cause of this stuff. It really should be causing us to think of our own capacity for evil instead of pointing the finger at others. That said, I don't want to deny that there are some pretty spectacular examples of religious violence through history. So I'm not trying to clean the ledger completely by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah.
Hey, going on from that with the wars, if we look at World War II, whilst religion might not be a cause of it, certainly the Holocaust was a major driving force, at least within the European wars. So we can't discount religion from that at all, I guess.
Ah, well, except it was a reverse cause, wasn't it? It wasn't that Hitler was trying to stand up for Christianity by killing Jews.
That religion was the issue.
Well, probably wasn't, actually. I think it's pretty clear now that Hitler's motivation was the what he understood to be the anthropological heritage of Jews. They were Semites and therefore not of the Aryan, the noble Aryan lineage that the Germanic peoples came from. He was completely wrong on that assumption too. So he was trying to exterminate people of Semitic origin, not people of Jewish faith in particular. It's just that Semites tended to be Jews. So he was against the Jews in as much as they were a lower race than the Aryans. So I think it wouldn't be accurate to describe it as religiously motivated. Yeah. Hitler certainly had no time for Orthodox Christianity. Yeah.
Dr. Nixon, it's Peter Goodall. You've talked a lot about Christianity over the centuries and their role. What about the other major religions, Buddhism, Islam, etc.? What role do they have in all of these same sorts of issues?
It's a difficult question to answer because I'm not an expert on each of the religions. I have a pretty good general knowledge of the other world religions, but I couldn't stand up as an to say I'm an expert. There were wars and there are conflicts that are Buddhist, Hindu and Muslim. And presumably, Buddhists would say that wars over Buddhist issues are being defiant of what the Buddha actually taught. I think that's probably true of Buddhism. Having read an awful lot of the Tripitaka myself, I think it's pretty clear Buddha was against hurting things. In Hinduism, I think if I've got my historian's cap on, I think I'd have to say there is a war tradition in Hinduism. You've only got to read the Bhagavad Gita, the most popular Hindu text. And it is all about a war and all about Prince Arjuna's duty to go to war because he is of the warrior caste. Now, fortunately, Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, interpreted the Bhagavad Gita in a metaphorical way and so brought this tradition of non-violence into India that is now mainstream. Okay, so I wouldn't want to say that in Hinduism there is a violent tradition. Islam, to offer the broadest overview, I don't think any Muslim would dispute that Muhammad was a famous and glorious warrior. It's indisputable. They would say, Muslims would say, that all of his wars were just wars. He was protecting the honour of Islam and protecting people from invaders and so on. But it's equally true that Muhammad was a warrior. He certainly wasn't more bloodthirsty. In fact, I would happily say, historically speaking, he was way more just than most Arabian lords. But he was a warrior and a very successful one. And the first 300 years of Islam are a story of incredibly successful wars. I don't say this with any animosity toward Islam. And I'm pretty sure every Muslim would agree that the first 300 years of Islam involved some spectacular, glorious wars for the sake of Islam that led to the spreading of Islam. Now that is a very different tradition from the Christian tradition, which shunned violence from the beginning and for the first 300 years, and then admittedly started to come unstuck and move away from Jesus' teaching. I should probably add, in case this is coming across a little unfair to Muslims, that having read the Quran from cover to cover, although there are quite a number of jihad passages that refer to active military jihad, it is pretty clear in the Quran that you're not to strike first. That jihad is only permissible as a defensive action. In fact, I can think of a surah in the Quran that says that God does not love the aggressors. You must not strike first. It then goes on to say, but if Islam is attacked, that it is permissible to use every stratagem of war, is what my Quran says, every stratagem of war to fight infidels, but only as a defensive move. It's important to understand that that is the orthodox Islamic view.
You spoke of the Dark Ages. Back here?
Yeah, sorry.
You spoke of the Dark Ages?
The man in the dark.
Has there been a golden age of Christianity, and are we now at the end of that, and are we entering a dark age? Is it on the decline?
Is Christianity on the decline? Was there a golden age? Well, I'm showing my bias here as an ancient historian. I think the first 300 years are the golden age. that said, the Middle Ages were periods of phenomenal growth in welfare, and the birth of universities came out of the monasteries. Universities were what... monasteries became universities in many cases throughout Europe. It's also fairly widely accepted that most of the very earliest scientists in the 16th century and 17th centuries thought that what they were doing was inspired by their Christian faith. So that was a pretty golden age. And if you want to look into this a little more, Peter Harrison of Oxford University is Professor of Science and Religion at Oxford. No slouch. Actually, he's a West Australian boy. Just remembered. Yeah. Peter Harrison, full professor at Oxford. Is kind of the leader in this area, demonstrating the very Christian roots of modern science. He doesn't dispute that it all went pear-shaped for the Christians. 2 centuries after, they sort of created a monster that knocked them out. But he's also adamant that really it was Christianity that inspired the experimental method that we take for granted now. But now, are we in an era where Christianity is on its way out? Yes and no. All the statistics seem to suggest that fewer and fewer people are going to churches. And so it'll be interesting to see what this next census tells us about church attendance. Currently, it's about 64% of Australians claim to be Christian in some way. 68% believe in God. About 10% claim to be atheists. So it'll be interesting to see how those figures move. But if the trajectory of the last 20 years is anything to go by, I think we're on a decline. It may be a correction. Some people say it's a correction, not a decline. That is, we now live in an era, thank God, where there's no social pressure just to go to church and put up with the boring sermon and the terrible hymns and so on. And so what we've experienced is a correction that may balance itself out. In fact, you know, we may just end up at 60% Christian with the same sort of church attendance rates that we've got now. We'll wait and see, right? But here's the interesting thing to throw into this mix of, are we entering into a dark ages for Christianity? Christianity is booming in Africa and China. And the statistics coming out of China are phenomenal. Conservatively, 90 million Christians in China. Okay, so if it were 100 million, that's 10%, I think. I was never good at maths, but that sound about right? 10% Christian in China. The growth rates in China are incredible. And if the next century is China's century, as people are saying, who knows what that means for Christianity? Yeah. So I think the claims of the death of God are premature. So if you didn't catch that, Tony Blair debated Christopher Hitchens in a massive debate. And Tony Blair was obviously defending religion. And the movement was in his direction, even though those against religion won the macro figure. You made a comment about how brilliant Christopher Hitchens is. I totally agree. There is one debate he admits to losing. In fact, he publicly said this mustn't go to a vote. Because Professor John Lennox has won hands down. This was at the Edinburgh Festival 3 years ago. So there is a debate out there worth getting your hands on where even the great Hitchens, who doesn't lose debates, in his own view anyway, lost the debate. And John Lennox, who's a professor at Oxford University, professor of mathematics, tells a very funny story that Richard Dawkins was in the front row scowling the whole debate, thinking Hitchens had let the team down.
John, my name is Johan van der Merwe. I'm from Africa, or South Africa. Thank you for mentioning the growth of the church in Africa and the growth in China. It sort of dwarfs the 22 million in Australia when you think of 2 billion people and the growth within that community. And our mandate is to go out into the world and establish the kingdom of God. You were a little bit shy on the matter between good and evil, and the source of good and the source of evil, and whether there is any source of good outside of religion, and where would that source come from? Because deep down, I'm an evolutionary biologist, and as a species, we have a keen interest in ourselves, not necessarily in the community. And the source of good gets inspired through religion. And without the religion, what would the source of good be, which bring you to the source of evil? And within the debate, would be better without religion, brings you into the domain of how do we deal with the source of evil? What's your view on that?
Okay. I think I'll try and restate. The questioner asks, where would you get a source of good within a completely atheistic paradigm if we're just creatures that have evolved and, we have our reptile brains, as it were, and also our mammal brains. Why would you choose the mammal brain over the reptile brain? Perhaps religion is the source of a good ethic. I think I've got what you're saying. I had a whole section of this talk that I left out about 20 minutes before I came. It was fantastic. Much better than what I delivered. But it was a little too feisty, and I thought better of it. But if I can remember what I was going to say, it was something along the lines of, there's one last question I'd want to put to our atheist friends in the audience, and it is not really trying to pick a fight, but it does go to this gentleman's question. We can agree that atheists and Christians alike are equally capable of loving and hating. But when a Christian loves, she does so in logical consistency with her worldview, which begins with the love of God and the innate and holy value of a human being. And when she hates, she does so in direct logical defiance of that worldview. The question I was going to throw out rather cheekily is there anything in the atheist view of things to compare? Is there anything within the atheist viewpoint that can logically curb hate and promote love? So what I'm saying, please don't mishear me, I'm not saying atheists can't be as good as Christians. They can. I can introduce you to atheist friends who live lives that are beautiful lives. Atheism can produce Stalin and Fred Hollows. Okay. Just as Christianity can have the Grand Inquisitor and Mother Teresa. My question, though, is only one of those lives, the Grand Inquisitor or Mother Teresa, is logically consistent with Christianity. But either Stalin or Fred Hollows is logically consistent with atheism. I'm just putting out the philosophical question. How can you ground our intuitive justice and desire for love without an absolute character of love and justice at the centre of the universe? Anyway, I was going to ask that and then run, and I thought better of it. So let's pretend I haven't said it.
Well, we've probably got time just for one final question.
Okay.
Dr. Dixon, it's been really good to hear from you explaining the past. I don't know whether as a historian you're willing to look forward, and you've talked about the declining rates of Christianity in Australia. Are we going to lose, if these continue, the benefits of You know, you talked about hospitals and justice, care for the poor, and you know, everything through education and so on. Are these going to be tainted or lost if we continue to depart? I mean, they seem so much part of Australian life at the moment that you know, it seems like you could ditch Christianity but still keep those.
I think you could certainly ditch Christianity and keep those. We've grown used to these. We've seen the beauty of these. We love these. And so that's why you have plenty of people who are atheists involved in humanitarian movements now. I would make the historical observation that these things came into the Western tradition via Christianity. I don't think that can be disputed. There was no social welfare in Greece and Rome. There was a social welfare program in Judaism in antiquity. It was only available for Jews. Christianity inherited that because they were all Jews, the early Christians. They inherited that social welfare paradigm. But their view of what God was doing in the world meant that it had to be opened up to Jew and Gentile, to believer and non-believer. This is why Emperor Julian is so panicking, because they care not only for their own poor but ours as well. Okay. So now we take for granted that there should be social welfare and it should be available regardless of your religious conviction or any basis of discrimination other than need, right? So historically, that came to us via Christianity. And I could spend numerous lectures talking about other things that came into the Western tradition, which we hold dearly, entirely through the Christian tradition. But these things have embedded themselves in our culture now, so that the average Australian, without any faith, assumes charity is a good thing. It should be on the basis of need, not race, religion, or whatever. And I suspect that that's so ingrained now that it just seems so logically, intuitively right, this is going to remain with us for a long time. And I often like stirring my atheist friends over a glass of wine by saying that our culture remains cruciform long after it stopped being Christian. That is, our culture is shaped by the cross of Christ. The whole idea of service and humility and the self-giving. Okay, that shaped Western culture dramatically to the point where even people who don't believe Christianity do believe that we should live cruciform lives, lives shaped by that sort of sacrificial love. We don't all do it, but we know that that's the noble high point. And I hope and I pray that that long remains, even if the whole country becomes atheist. I hope they'll still hear the beautiful tune in their heads ringing, that the one that Jesus taught. So I haven't really answered your question, but I don't know that I can prognosticate that, you know, I'm a historian. I look backwards much easier.
Well, please join me again in thanking you.